Each candidate will have 30 seconds to introduce themselves. The introduction will be followed by a set of short answer questions, longer answer questions, and lightning round questions. Following the questions, the candidates will each have 1 minute for closing comments. We have timekeepers in the chamber. During the questions, they will hold up a sign to indicate when each candidate has 15 seconds remaining, you can see, and another sign when it is time to stop. You will also hear a bell. Ding! We're simulating a bell. When your time is expired. Because of the large number of candidates tonight, the time limits will be strictly enforced. We will rotate the order in which candidates are questioned for each round. We're ready to start our first round. This year, we have 9 candidates for 3 seats in the House. The term for each seat is 2 years. For House Seat 2, there are 2 candidates, Steve Thompson and Jeremiah Humans. Mr. Humans is present. Mr. Thompson is not here this evening due to family responsibilities. For Seat 5, there are 2 candidates, Kevin McKinley and Adam Wohl. For Seat 6, there are 5 candidates, Vernon Carlson, Michael Kronk, Julia Nilica, and Elijah Verhagen are present. Deborah Riley is not with us tonight. Please introduce yourself. You have 30 seconds each, starting with Seat 2, Mr. Humans.
Good evening. Thank you to the League of Women Voters for hosting this forum, and thank you to everyone out there listening. My name's Jeremiah Humans. My pronouns are he, him, his, and I'm the Democratic candidate for House District 2. Fairbanks and Fort Wainwright, which is the unceded territory of the Lower Tanana Dene. I'm a veteran who's deployed twice in support of Operation Enduring Freedom, who has finished his service and is ready to serve the state of Alaska. Too long, our legislators have pushed the ticket down the line, and it's time for decisive action.
Thank you. Seat 5, Mr. McKinley.
Yes, I want to thank the League of Women Voters for putting this event on. It's much appreciated, and I want to thank the listeners for tuning in. As they said, my name is Kevin McKinley. I'm a Republican candidate for House District 5, and I'm running because I do care. I care about the state of Alaska, I care about the voters, and I care about Alaska's future.
Thank you. Mr. Wohl.
Thank you. Thank you for the League of Women Voters and for KUAC for broadcasting this, because it's important to get these kinds of meetings out to the people. My name is Adam Wohl. I'm the representative from District 5. I'm serving my third term in this position, and I'm seeking a fourth. District 5 is centered around the university on the west side of Fairbanks, but goes from the Parks Highway all the way out to Salcha. So it's a long district, and I'm looking forward to serving it another 2 years.
Thank you. Seat 6, Mr. Carlson.
Thank you to the League of Women Voters for hosting this evening. I'm Vernon Carlson. I'm running for this House, Alaska House Representative, District 6. I'm an Otnath Baskin who was born and raised in Cantwell, where I still reside after 58 years. I'm running for this seat as a nonpartisan because that truly reflects my rural lifestyle and my expectation of cultural awareness. My goals in Juneau are pretty simple. Jobs for rural Alaska and rural Alaska, healthcare in rural Alaska for rural Alaska, education in rural Alaska for rural Alaska, and justice in rural Alaska for rural Alaska. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Nilica.
Thank you very much to the League of Women Voters for hosting this. My name is Julia Nilica. My parents are Jan, Renee, and Charlie Nilica. I am raised up and still live in Nenana, which is on the Lower Tanana Dene lands. I believe that we come from an abundant land and a resilient, hardworking people, and that we should not be made to feel afraid for our future. I believe that the future is Alaskan, and I am going to work hard and fight hard for rural Alaska so that we are not impacted by policies that force urbanization. Thank you.
Thank you. My apologies, I missed Mr. Kronk. Mr. Kronk, please.
All right. Thank you. Thank you, the League of Women Voters, for hosting this. My name is Mike Kronk. I'm from Choke, Alaska, 25-year retired teacher. I'm running because I think we get caught up in the gloom and doom, and you know, we really live in the most incredible place in the world with the most incredible people in the world. And I believe that, you know, I want to be part of the team that goes to Juneau and is working for the people of rural Alaska and District 6. You know, so our future for our kids is there and for our grandkids. We live in the most amazing place in the world. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Verhagen.
I also want to thank the League of Women Voters for hosting this. Really appreciate it. My name is Elijah Verhagen. I am born and raised in Enana. I am running as an undeclared conservative candidate for House District 6. I have worked as a staffer in Juneau on and off for 7 legislative sessions, 4 different representatives. I am not content with especially the financial direction our state's going, and so I'm going to use my experience to go down there and do what I can to help balance the budget, even though it's going to take a while, but I am optimistic we can do it. Thank you.
Thank you. Now for question 1, you will each have 30 seconds. Given how divisive politics in our country and state have become, what steps would you suggest to overcome this divisiveness and make state government more effective? What are some areas of legislation for which you expect to reach across the aisle? We'll start with seat 5, Mr. Wolf.
Thank you. I think that's a great concept to be talking about, especially nowadays. I'd say we've done some of that in our House Majority Caucus already. We've made a lot of compromises with members. We have Republicans, Democrats, Independents. We came together. We had to keep our common goals forward and the things we disagree about in the back, and we succeeded in doing that. We passed a fiscal plan a couple of years ago through the House, and look forward to doing that again, working together with both sides, House, Senate, Republicans, Democrats.
Thank you. Mr. McKinley.
Thank you. This is a really good question. The biggest part of divisiveness is not talking and not getting along and being concerned about one's own goals and objectives. It is important that each party, each individual, feels included in these decisions. And the area that most needs to have people coming together and working together, I believe, is going to be the state budget. I think that's where the most work needs to be done.
Okay, thank you. And, okay, let's go to seat 6. Mr. Cronk, please.
Yeah, I mean, working together is key. I mean, we need to put our differences aside and find the common goals that we can work towards. And like Kevin said, obviously the budget is going to be the biggest thing going on in Juneau. And I believe that, you know, with the proper leadership and teamwork, we can get people together and find the common ground and really focus on that, you know, and just keep working to make Alaska the best place. Thank you.
Ms. Milica?
Thank you for the question. This is a very, very important topic because as we see downstate, division is driving a lot of our politics. And we here in Alaska, we have a small population and we have a lot of work to get done in the coming years. I will make sure to bridge this gap by forming personal relationships with other legislators. And I will also be holding town halls across the district to make sure that I am bringing the voice of all of the people in my district. Thank you.
Mr. Verhagen?
I'm born and raised in Enana. In Enana, it really rarely is talked about which party people are from. City council, people get together and they discuss things based on its merit and the issues. And that's something that I'm really hoping, that's my long-term goal down in Juneau, is to be able to work, find common ground, things like agriculture, things like helping with poverty reduction and other things in Alaska. There's always common ground we can find with others. And so I decided to run as an undeclared. Thank you.
Mr. Carlson.
As your true nonpartisan candidate that is running in this for the seat, I'm my goals are pretty simple, and I can definitely reflect myself or approach myself across the party lines because I'm not in a party. First and foremost, we need a plan. We got to have a vision. We got to have a long-term plan. What's our 10-year plan? What's our 20-year plan? What's our 30-year plan? Once we got a plan built of how we want where we want our state to go, then we go from there as how we're going to finance it and where the income's going to come from and where the income's going to go out to.
And seat 2, Mr. Ewing.
Yes, thank you for the question. It's going to be important to find compromise in Juneau, and we're going to do that by having common ground and dealing with our values. We're all going to have different ideas on a certain amount of percentage for a tax or whatever else, or how many, you know, specific things. But, you know, our values can lead us together to come with compromise to be able to, you know, bring Alaska forward. And I think that all the candidates here want to improve Alaska. So I think we can, you know, compromise on that.
Next, we'll have two lightning round questions. Question number two, do you believe in climate change? Beginning with seat six, Ms. Nelica?
Yes, absolutely.
Mr. Verhagen?
Yes.
Mr. Carlson?
Yes, absolutely.
Mr. Kronk?
Yes.
Thank you. Seat two, Mr. Eumann?
Yes.
And seat five, Mr. McKinley?
Yes.
And Mr. Wohl?
Yes to human-caused climate change as well.
So question three of the lightning round. Do you believe that at this time, human activity is a primary driver of climate change? Seat two, Mr. Eumann?
Yes.
Seat five, Mr. Wohl?
Yes.
Mr. McKinley?
Would you repeat the question?
Do you believe that at this time, human activity is a primary driver of climate change?
Yes.
Seat six, Mr. Verhagen?
I wouldn't say not a primary driver, but yes, a driver.
Mr. Carlson?
Yes.
Mr. Kronk?
Yes, somewhat.
And Ms. Nelica?
Yes.
Okay, on to question four. You'll have 1 minute each. The governor disbanded the state climate change task force, and the borough's climate change task force has been put on hold. All this inactivity is despite record high temperatures, wildfires, low salmon returns, and loss of sea ice. There are two parts to this question. First, what specific effective steps do you think the state should take to address climate change? And two, how would you support the growing green renewable energy sector in Alaska? Beginning with seat five, Mr. McKinley.
Thank you. That's a really good question. I think one of the primary things is to start developing our clean energy. I think natural gas is a clean energy. I think it would help the economy, and I think that it would help Alaskans not only for providing cheaper energy, but also for cleaner energy. And I think that what we need to do is have market-based solutions in this to actually move the meter on climate change and get people more involved. Market-based solutions. Thank you.
Mr. Wolf.
Okay, I'm sorry, can you repeat the question?
Sure. Okay, two parts to the question. Number one, what specific effective steps do you think the state should take to address climate change? And two, how would you support the growing green renewable energy sector in Alaska?
Thank you, and thank you for repeating it. Specific from the state, I think a lot of what we're experiencing globally or nationally is not necessarily a state solution, although the state needs to get on board. I think we have to urge our federal leadership to take a global position, you know, with the Paris Accord, et cetera, and start working on that. As far as green energy, I support it 100%. It is difficult in Alaska, and it's not as economical as it is, say, in Arizona or places where there's a lot of solar. We do have some areas where we can explore, and I think we should look towards that. Natural gas is a bridge away from oil and coal that will be a step in the right direction. We certainly have plenty of that. We have hydro. We have wind. We can start developing those kind of areas. Some communities like Kodiak use exclusively renewables. So I'm not saying Fairbanks can do that, but we have some areas where we should pursue for sure.
Thank you. Seat six, Mr. Carlson.
Can you repeat the question again?
Sure. It is a long one. First, two parts. First part, what specific effective steps do you think the state should take to address climate change? And two, how would you support the growing green renewable energy sector in Alaska?
The first part, I think the state should continue doing what we're doing already, and one of them is like the wind farm that's in Eva Creek down there is supporting more industries of that nature, because I think that's a very successful program other than probably the high expense of it. The second part, and more importantly, is the green energy part, and I think we should do something that resembles what the Japanese are doing in Australia right now, and they're they're turning coal into ammonia, which is getting further turned into hydrogen, and then they're taking that hydrogen over to Japan for clean energy. And I think it's a value-added product, and we have gobs of coal, we have gobs of wind, and we can do this. And I think it would make sense, and it would add jobs to our economy, which is part of my focus, is I want jobs, and I want second-level jobs. And it would support. So thank you.
Mr. Kronk.
Well, I think we need to continue to, develop the cleaner things. And natural gas, obviously, is clean. We do have very clean coal at Yucabelli, so I think we should take advantage of that. Our school district in Tok is using a biomass boiler there that uses and basically there's no emissions coming out of there. And, you know, it produces steam, and we are actually producing electricity through that also. So that's a really good step, and I think we need to share that information. Obviously, we were the experiment, so we have it scaled down so other school districts and you know, cities and boroughs could actually take advantage of that. When you're talking about green energy, it's like, what is more destructive to the environment? Is it, you know, are we mining the right stuff that's, destroying the environment? But I believe when we look at the green energy, we need to make sure it's cost effective. And I do believe there's places in Alaska that we can take advantage of that.
Ms. Nilica?
Thank you for that really important question. I believe that green energy is cost effective because or else we are costing our future generations their clean air, their clean water, and we need to make sure that we follow what Dunleavy actually wrote in a letter to Warren Buffett. So this was reported out in the Alaska Public Media. This is a direct quote from that letter. Transitioning Alaska to clean, reliable, inexpensive energy is one of the greatest things we could do to attract additional investment, diversify and grow our economy, and lower the economic burden on Alaskans in powering their homes and businesses. Alaska is a vast and wonderful wild place. We have so many sources of energy, from thermal to solar to wind and to hydro. There are exciting projects that our university is doing, and we need to continue to support research here in Alaska and promote it further. Thank you.
Mr. Verhagen?
So the climate, no doubt, is changing in Alaska, and so we definitely as a state need to be watching and using the science that we have, especially from the universities, to see how we as a state and communities can adapt to the changing climate. However, I do not believe that we're going to be able, as humans, to stop the climate change in Alaska. And so adapting is what we need to be focused on. But we have other really big issues. 15% of Alaskans are in poverty. I've seen that stat several times. There's a lot of things that we need to be working on. As far as green energy, absolutely, we have things like solar farm. There's a big one in Willow. They're working on putting a big one in Enana. We have the biomass facility in Tok and in several others around the state, and they're also putting one in Enana. We have wind power down in Healy, as mentioned, and so I absolutely support investing in these outright or initially expensive but long-term beneficial projects.
C2, Mr. Humans.
Yes, thank you for the question. The climate crisis is one of the largest crises facing us as human beings on this planet, and we need to do everything in all levels of government to encourage our adaptation to this, and part of that is going to be green energy, because that's also going to lead to us diversifying our economy and driving investment in our state. With Facebook, for example, has built data centers in Sweden because of their vast reserves of renewable energy. That way they can have 100% clean running data centers, and they're in Sweden because it's cold there. That's the primary, you know, those are the two things you need for data centers, is cold to, you know, keep those servers from overheating, and you need electricity, and we need to drive innovation so we can have clean energy and get investment into our state. Thank you.
Next, we'll have three lightning round questions leading up to a longer answer question. Question 5, lightning round. Ballot Measure 1 would increase the taxes on North Slope oil production. How do you suggest voters cast their ballot on Measure 1, for or against? Beginning with Seat 6, Mr. Kronk.
No.
Ms. Nilica.
For.
Mr. Verhagen.
Against.
Mr. Carlson.
I'm going to be neutral on that because I don't like ballot measures at all.
Seat 2, Mr. Humans.
For.
Mr. Wohl?
I'm truly undecided on that one.
Mr. McKinley?
Against.
Question 6 of the lightning round. Would you support passage of a resolution to place a constitutional amendment before the voters to change the vote needed to override a governor's veto on all bills to a two-thirds vote of the legislature rather than three-quarters? Seat 2, Mr. Humans?
Yes.
Seat 5, Mr. McKinley?
No.
Mr. Wohl?
Yes.
Seat 6, Ms. Nilica?
Yes.
Mr. Verhagen?
No.
Mr. Carlson?
No.
Mr. Kronk?
No.
Question 7 of the lightning round. Do you think that there is a legal means for forward funding of public education? Seat 5, Mr. Wohl?
Yes.
Mr. McKinley?
I want to say yes, but I'm not sure.
Okay. Seat 6, Mr. Verhagen?
Yes.
Mr. Carlson?
Yes.
Mr. Kronk?
Yes.
Ms. Nilica?
Yes.
And Seat 2, Mr. Humans?
Yes.
Question 8. You'll have 1 minute and 45 seconds. Commonwealth North has a budget calculator at www.akbudget.com. that allows the public to look at various ways to try to balance the state budget. This calculator makes it clear that we will need both increased revenue and decreased expenses. How would you balance the state budget? Name at least 2 specific sources of increased revenue and 2 specific cuts in spending you would make. Seat 6, Mr. Verhagen.
As far as 2 cuts that I would make, I would put a hold on hiring new state troopers right now. I was on the committee last year when we funded more state troopers, 15 new positions. We have a crisis in our corrections department. We are way understaffed, and so there's, with the budget crisis that we're in, we really have to be looking at where we're spending our money. And the only reason I would put a hold on and maybe decrease a little bit of the troopers' budget is only because in front of the committee that I was working on for my boss, they told us the locations of where they were sending troopers, and so many of the areas were areas that already have functioning police departments, and rural areas like District 6 are continually ignored with sending troopers out there. I was talking with the chief of Fort Yukon. They would like a trooper out in Fort Yukon, and they don't have one. Town of over 600 people, they, especially with them asking for it. And so until the troopers are actually sending out more troopers into these rural areas, that is one place I would look at. As far as another cut, I would look at cutting a small percentage off of not K through 12 education, but pre-K education. We're constitutionally mandated to pay K through 12 funding. We are not with pre-K, and although I have a young son. I definitely support pre-K. That's something that I do not feel can afford right now. As far as revenue, I have 2 things. One thing, looking at changing the royalty for oil, and another thing is severance tax on our minerals.
Mr. Carlson.
I went through this exercise on Commonwealth North, and it started off with a $1,300,000,000 gap, and I got it down to about $56 million with the gap. First thing I'm going to do is I'm going to increase corporate income taxes because I just think they're way underdone and they're just taking resources out of Alaska. If they want to do second value on resources, then I would explore lowering the tax rate, but if they're just going to take raw material out, it's going to have high taxes on it because it's our materials. And that also includes taxing minerals that are going, whether it be gold, oil, silver, whatever, if it's going out raw, it's going to get taxed accordingly. I don't believe in the term cuts. I'm not going to use that term. It's not going to be in my dialogue. I believe in forward planning. Have an idea. What do we want? Prioritize our spending accordingly. Figure out what it costs, and then accordingly we're going to adjust our budgets to fit the amount of revenue we got coming in. I'm not going to say, well, I'm going to cut this, cut that, because it doesn't make any sense to me to cut. It makes more sense to me to plan ahead and look to the future to see what I got and what I have to go with. Thank you.
Mr. Kronk.
Probably one of the first places I would look at to cut is we need to take a look at our Medicaid and how that system's working, because there is a ton of fraud in that. And when you have your matching dollars, our health bill has skyrocketed continuously. So I think that's an area we really need to take a look at. We're constitutionally mandated to fund education, and that is one of the top three, you know, budget items. And I would like to see ways that we can, you know, streamline that so we're actually spending our money better. And like Elijah said, the pre-K is what's not constitutionally mandated, and no one wants to tap into that. But I do think we need to look at that and find better ways to fund those things. I had an incredible, there was a town meeting in Anchorage earlier this year, and it was like all different kinds of people coming together. And there is one economist that says he believes that Alaska is losing close to $1 billion in investment alone. So, you know, for source of revenue, I think we really need to get some experts in there and take a look at what we're investing in, because if it's, you know, he said minimum of $500 million. Hey, that's a lot of money. So I think we need to check out our investments and make sure we're getting the max money for what we have there. And I do believe that, you know, we need to check out the minerals and make sure if they're coming out of the ground that, you know, the state is getting some value for that, because those belong to the citizens of Alaska.
Ms. Nilica?
After looking at the budget plan, I would have to say that there are two specific ways that we can raise revenue. Firstly, Alaska has the lowest motor fuel tax in the nation, so we need to analyze that, and we need to make sure that we bring that up so that we are able to take care of our roads and our airports and our harbors. We also need to be making sure that we are getting our maximum benefit from our extractive resource industries as guaranteed to us by the Constitution. So those are the two places that we need to look first for gaining more revenue. As for cuts, I believe that our correction system is not serving the people that end up going through it. We need to make sure that we are utilizing the funds that are going into our correction services, not just for locking people up, but to make sure that they are being rehabilitated while they are there. I think that this is this is something that can be completely restructured within our correction system. We do not need to send people out of state. We need to find ways to rehabilitate them within our state, within our communities. I also think that our court system, although I do not advocate that people spend longer times going through the court system, we need to make sure that we are speeding up those times and that people are having access to speedy justice. We need to make sure that our court systems are a luge for justice, not to hold people up in prison for longer than they deserve. Thank you.
Seat two, Mr. Heumann.
Yeah, thank you for that question. It's the question on everyone's mind is how we're going to balance the budget. I think that I'll start with cuts. For cuts, I would look at the state troopers and the corrections. I hear a lot of opposition saying that, you know, we need to get better educational outcomes. That's why we need to, you know, look at the education formula. But we're not getting criminal justice outcomes that we need. So we need to look at how we're funding that. But for new revenue, you know, we're, you know, the legislature kind of has its hands tied because it's refused to look at any new revenue, whether it's oil. So we're going to, I support ballot measure one. But also we need to look at a progressive income tax, broad-based, because right now the state is relying on a backhanded regressive tax by confiscating the PFD and using the earnings reserve account to fund the government. And what we need to do is we need to look at who pays for government. And we need to fund government fairly and make sure that we are getting our value for our government. Thank you.
Seat 5, Mr. McKinley.
Hi. This evening we've heard a lot of different ideas, and that's going to give you an idea of what's going to happen in Juneau when we go down there. You're going to try to get all these people to get on board with all these different ideas. And I think that what we really need to do is switch the conversation to back to one of the first questions that we had, and that is how we're going to start having compromise and how we're going to put these ideas together. And with that, what I'm saying that I want to do is when we're approaching any of these ideas, that they should be fair and equitable and have the least adverse impact on our population. And that is going to be one of the most important things. And a lot of us here are very big fans of the university system. And the university system has an institute called ICER, Institute of Social and Economic Research, I believe is what the acronym stands for. And they put out a report about the economic impacts of different choices that Alaskans or the legislators have to make on these subjects. And I think that we need to start paying attention to that and finding out what really is fair and what is going to have the least adverse impact, because we need to have everybody involved in this process, because we're all going to be affected, all of us. I don't think there's anyone out here, anybody on this bench, that is going to be able to walk away after we reshape our economy and say, it didn't touch me. Just for really quick last, I really like what Wyoming did. What they did is they did some cuts across the board, because no legislator really likes to say a specific cut, so they kind of just went across the board. Look it up, Google it, Wyoming, their budget. Thank you.
Mr. Wolf.
Thank you. This is the question that we've been facing for years now. How do we balance a budget, basically? The legislature's cut about $1 billion off the budget, not including capital budget, over the last 5 years. And that hasn't been easy. And the last set of cuts, not this year, the previous year that the governor proposed, the public came unglued about it and didn't want it. We heard in waves of people responding that these cuts were over the top, whether it's a university, education, all kinds of other services that the government provides. And people didn't want to hear it. So we've been talking about that a lot. The PFD definitely is a budget item that at full statutory formula is $2 billion, the largest thing we have. So that's definitely something that we haven't paid fully in years, and for good reason, because we just don't have the money. So if we paid a zero PFD with the current revenue projections, we'd have about a $300 million deficit. If ballot measure one passes, which should bring in about another $200 million. So we'd maybe be at a $100 million deficit, which in the scheme of things isn't that large. I don't know if the ballot measure will pass. If it doesn't, we should definitely adjust oil taxes. They definitely need a correction. Motor fuel tax would be great. We had a bill on our desk ready to pass the Senate. It was getting ready to pass the House. We didn't do it. That would have brought in, that would have doubled the motor fuel tax, would have brought in $40 million. $40 million's not a lot of money, but it's not a little money, but it's not going to fund the university. Corrections, what corrections does is they take people that are sentenced and put them in jail. They don't determine who comes or goes. They just put them in. And we've increased the budget to corrections last year because of the repeal of SB 91. So I think we have to look at who we send to jail.
Thank you.
The delivery of education and medicine, as well as the running of many businesses, rely more than ever on access to broadband internet. What would you do to make broadband internet available to every household that wants it? 30 seconds. Mr. Humans?
Yeah, thank you. This is a super important question, because I think that everyone out there who has children has dealt with the poor broadband internet in Alaska right now. As an IT professional, I think that, you know, that broadband needs to be treated like a utility, and we need to get all of the federal dollars that we can and all of the investment we can to get broadband to every Alaskan, whether it's through dealing with Starlink or for new satellite systems, or running fiber ourselves to get broadband to every Alaskan. Thank you.
Seat 5, Mr. Wohl.
Internet is definitely a hot topic right now as most kids are learning from home, and many communities right here in Fairbanks don't have good internet. So I think it should be up there with the utilities that the federal government helps guarantee, like electricity and telephone and these kind of basic utilities. And I think it should be provided to everyone, whether it's hardwire or satellite. It should definitely be something that's provided with the Rural Utilities Act or Rural Internet Act or something like that. We have to push for that.
Mr. McKinley?
Yes, it'd be great if we could get some federal assistance on that. Without that, one of the questions that we have to decide is how we're going to pay for this, because it is needed. And when you start looking at the villages and looking at where our school system is going, it does seem like we're needing it more and more. And so what I'm suggesting that we look at is some market-based solutions on how to do this. Thank you.
Thank you. Seat 6, Mr. Carlson.
This really isn't a complex question. I mean, like, just partner with private industry. It's not that hard. They've got 3 fiber optic lines running down the Parks Highway, one running down the Alaska Railroad, one running down the Intertie. We can get one running down the Yukon River, one running down the Kuskokwim River. We got a big line coming over the top of the North Pole now. There's 14 lines coming across the Atlantic. I mean, partner with private industry. They'd be all about it, and we can make this happen. This isn't that difficult.
Thank you. Mr. Kronk?
It's a huge question for our district. We need to get all the federal funding we can to make this happen. This is truly important for education, health services, you know, and safety in our villages. And you know, I agree with Vernon. We need to partnership with these companies. We have fiber optic right down the Alaska Highway, right down some of our areas, Saltram, Moose Creek, that really don't have this. And we need to get this. You know, we could have, and in my mind, we could use some CARES Act fund to actually pay for some of this. And an announcement just came out that, you know, that there was some funding for some different places. Thank you.
Ms. Nilica?
This is the biggest question that is facing House District 6. From Salcha to Arctic Village, we need to close that middle mile. We need to be pushing on our congressional delegation to make sure that they and the federal government is recognizing our strength in Alaska as an Arctic player. We need to make sure that we are building up our infrastructure, and we need to make sure that we are providing flexible job opportunities to rural people. This is a way that we can bring people back to our rural communities. We can educate them, keep them safe, and keep them healthy. Thank you.
Mr. Verhagen?
So Senator Sullivan has been instrumental. We just recently, he announced that we got $46 million in money designated for broadband, and that's fantastic news, especially for District 6. A lot of the things that we can help with is getting restrictions out of the way for things like HughesNet, installers to actually be able to set up their own satellite systems on people's customers' houses. I carried a bill for Dave Tallarico doing that very thing, making it to where you didn't have to be part of a union to install a HughesNet satellite. And so there's ways that we can pull back restrictions.
Next question is a lightning round. Do you believe there is systemic racism in the USA? Seat 5, Mr. McKinley.
No.
Mr. Wohl?
Yes.
Seat 6, Mr. Kronk?
No.
Ms. Nilica?
Yes.
Mr. Verhagen?
Not near as much as the media would have us believe.
Mr. Carlson?
Absolutely.
And seat 2, Mr. Heumann?
Yes.
Question 11 is 1 minute. According to mappingpoliceviolence.org, Alaska has the third highest rate of killing by police in the country, and people of color are disproportionately affected. How would you address this public safety issue, and as a specific issue, what is your opinion on the use of chokeholds? Seat 6, Ms. Nilica.
Thank you. This question is really based on growing up our own law enforcement and also revamping our VPSO program so that they are able to serve our communities. We need to have law enforcement within our communities that know us, that care for us, and that will protect us. We need to have people not just flown in or driven out for short amount of time that don't know us and have stereotypes perceived of us. I do not believe that chokeholds should be used on people. And I think that a lot of what happens between law enforcement violence and people is because we don't have those relationships built. Officers are also frightened. People are frightened. And that is because we are not building up the dialogue. We do not have the training of our police officers to deal with mental health situations and extreme situations where people are in distress, and we need to address that.
Thank you. Mr. Verhagen?
I definitely support our police officers and state troopers. We have a lot of good ones out there, the majority of them. We have a few bad apples, of course, all over the world, and even in our state, there's been horrific examples of troopers or police that have gone against everything that they've been trained to do. And so we need to definitely be very, very strict on those that do break their oaths. But at the same time, I do support, and I think most of our state troopers and police are doing a great job. I would work closely with them and the commissioner and see what we could do. I do know I don't want to step on their toes and how they're trained, but I would, a great question I will ask is, they're trained, I've heard, to, if they do shoot, they shoot to kill. And I would definitely want to talk with them and see, you know, is there a way that we can, if we do have to shoot to defend ourselves, maybe shoot, you know, an arm or a leg or something to slow the person down without actually having to kill every time we shoot. So thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Carlson?
This is a very complex question. There's no way to put a one-word answer on it. But, because my support of law enforcement goes back 35 years or plus as an adult. It goes back to, we got to look at why are these people getting arrested in the first place, and why are we getting in this environment in the very first place? So it goes back to education, it goes back to pre-K, it goes back to K-12, it goes to college, it goes all the way through. It's like, what's the breakdown of society? It also gets back to the kind of referring to what one of my competitors talked about, is the relationship we have between our police, our troopers, our VPSOs, and our communities. And that relationship is probably broken down, and we need to rebuild that relationship so they know who they're seeing, who they're talking about. You know, in my own experience, personal experience, I've had troopers come knocking on the door with various people that I know, and they're like, can you just take care of this guy, because he's not going to be a problem. And it's like, we know, and that was because we had a good relationship.
Mr. Cronk?
Yeah, first of all, first and foremost, we need to build relationships with people. Education's key. Obviously, I was in the Vegas shooting, and mental health is of the utmost importance, and I don't think anybody can argue that. But we need to build strong, healthy human beings, and that starts in school. We need to teach kids how to be resilient and how to deflect any bad things that's going to happen to them, So we have to start with our kids first and foremost. But I am a firm believer in our public safety. I have some of my best friends are troopers or they're Anchorage PD. And you know what? They deserve to come home safe every night. So things do happen, but we need to make sure that all of our public safety has the best training and they have everything that they need to do their job and get to come home safe every day, because they're protecting all of us. Thank you.
Seat two, Mr. Heumann.
Yeah, thank you for the question. I'm going to start off with the specifically about the chokeholds thing, that I do not support that. As someone who has been in a chokehold before, I don't support it. But I heard a couple things from other people that kind of annoyed me, but the phrase is, a few bad apples ruins the whole bunch. But I think that we need to have early intervention so that people aren't interacting with the police. So we need to address our mental health crisis and fund those services so that people can get services and get the help they need before they interact with the police, whether it's through housing the houseless or, providing mental health services. That's what we need to do. And then we also need to, build the communities like lots of people have been discussing, and training the police on things like implicit bias, etc. Thank you.
Seat five, Mr. Wohl.
Yeah, this is a very complex issue with a complex answer. Alaska leads the nation in many crimes, violent crimes, gun crimes, rape, murder, all these other things is up near the top. So it doesn't surprise me that police intervention with resulting in death is we're high here too. I think we have to work on de-escalation. We also have to work on how to deal with mentally ill people that need help. But if a bunch of armed people show up, that's automatic escalation without even trying. And sometimes people are trying to harm themselves, and they end up being killed at the hands of police. So I think we need training. We need sort of awareness. We need a full-spectrum solution with mental health and social workers. Maybe the first person on the scene shouldn't be an armed person for certain instances. I do not support chokeholds, but again, this is a very complicated issue, and law enforcement is put in a very difficult position and asked to do a lot more than they used to be traditionally.
Thank you. Mr. McKinley?
Yes, this really is a complex question, and I'll take the easy one first. As far as chokeholds go, is that I'm not a fan of chokeholds. I don't think that they should be used, and I'd be surprised if law enforcement here approves them also. We have another problem that's also affecting this, and that's a drug and alcohol problem that's really plaguing Alaska. And the amount of police calls that are drug and alcohol related is astonishing. So I think we need to also address that. I do agree with the people that said that we need to build relationships with law enforcement in the community. I also think that the state troopers especially have a problem that we're losing troopers. Troopers are wanting to go to other places to get jobs. And so one of the things that we need to look at is retention.
Okay, on to question 12. You will have 30 seconds to answer. What Alaska Native issues will you take up? For example, subsistence hunting concerns and the disturbing problem of missing and murdered Alaska Native women. What are your priorities? Seat 2, Mr. Humans.
Yeah, thank you for the question. I think one of the first things we need to start with is have the state recognize our federally recognized tribes and work with them on a government-to-government basis for all of the projects in their region. But I do think that the issue of missing and murdered Indigenous women is a huge issue and a huge problem that needs to be addressed. I'm glad that the federal government is addressing it, but I would like to know where those funds went. Thank you.
Seat 5, Mr. McKinley.
Yes, and thank you for the question on this one. I believe that one of the biggest things that we could do for our Native communities is provide economic opportunities. We need to be able to provide jobs. Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Wolf.
Thank you. I agree with the previous speaker. I think the economy is part of the solution. I think if you look at public safety and VPSO issue, for example, in rural Alaska, we need to try to stem some of these problems and look into causation. Loss of livelihood, loss of lifestyle, I think these are all tied in, and the economy. But I think we have to look at the holistic approach and things like energy and energy costs in rural Alaska are also tied into the economy, and that's all I'm going to say for now.
Thank you. Seat 6, Mr. Verhagen.
So I have been talking with a lot of Native leaders and people in the villages that I've been meeting with, and kind of the reoccurring theme is the closures from Fish and Game on fishing. Especially this year, they closed chum fishing. We all depend on that, especially in District 6, and so that's something I'm going to work closely with to make sure that our people, many of whom subsist off of this hunting and fishing, are able to get what they need for their families before it's closed on them, and then, of course, do everything we can to help.
Mr. Carlson.
First of all, I want to say that I'm Native, and I'm no different than anybody else in this room, so when we start looking at this, it makes me feel like I'm putting out. My reason for running is I want jobs for rural Alaska in rural Alaska, health care for rural Alaska in rural Alaska, education for rural Alaska in rural Alaska, and justice for rural Alaskans in rural Alaska. no longer can we not. I can't even be in the jury system in my own hometown. I haven't sat on a jury in almost 25 years, and it, because we live in rural Alaska and we're excluded for it, and we wonder why we have all of these issues.
Mr. Kronk.
First of all, we do need to partner with our tribes and corporations. We need to figure out ways to get cheap energy, build the resources so we have jobs. Subsistence, abuse, addiction, public safety, education. I have been living this for 40 years. I know exactly what's going on out there, and I plan on getting to Juneau to help all of these issues. There are a lot of issues there, and we want to create people that can help themselves, first and foremost. They're very strong people. And we just need to give them the tools.
Ms. Milica.
Thank you. I will make sure that we confront our missing, murdered Indigenous women and girls crisis head on. Our men, women, and children need to feel safe within our communities. Currently, here in the interior, we are missing three people. We are missing Debbie Nicktoon. We are missing Doran Sanford. And we are missing from Nenana, Frankie Manano. We need to remember these people, we need to talk about them, and we need to find them, we need to find closure, and we need to protect our people so that they don't go missing, murdered, or injured in any way. Thank you.
Question 13 is a lightning round. Ballot Measure 2 would give Alaskans open primaries and ranked choice voting for general elections, as well as requiring more campaign financing disclosure. How do you suggest voters vote on ballot measure 2, for or against? Seat 5, Mr. Wohl.
I support ballot measure 2.
Mr. McKinley?
Against.
Seat 6, Mr. Carlson?
Again, I'm very neutral on ballot measures. I don't support any ballot measures at all.
Mr. Kronk?
Against.
Ms. Nilica?
Undecided.
Mr. Verhagen?
Against.
And Mr. Heumann?
For.
Okay, you're past the questions. You can breathe a little bit. It's time for closing statements. You each have 1 minute. We'll begin with seat 2, Mr. Heumann.
All right. Thank you again to the League of Women Voters for putting on this event, and thank you to all the candidates for showing up. It's important for the people of Alaska to hear from their candidates. And thank you to all of the people out there listening right now and listening to this in the future. It's important for you to hear from your candidates and to do that and then go vote. Again, my name is Jeremiah Heumanns. I'm running for House District 2, which is Fort Wainwright and Badger. I'm a veteran who's ready to serve Alaska and push Alaska forward instead of kicking the can down the road, draining our savings, draining the ERA, and then draining the permanent fund. We need to find a long-term fiscal solution to Alaska's problems and not continue to kick the can down the road. Thank you.
Now, seat 5, Kevin McKinley.
Hi, and I want to thank again the League of Women Voters for putting this event on. I think it's really important. I think one of the biggest questions that we have here tonight is, how do we work together? How do we accomplish that? You've heard a lot of interesting answers today from this group of people. And to get those ideas working and formulate those into plans, we have to start listening. We have to start listening to people and figure out how to put those plans into action instead of just putting up our walls and saying no. I think that the biggest thing that we can do right now that I want to tell people out there is to get out and vote. It's part of your responsibility as a citizen, and Alaska is one of the easiest places to vote. So please go out there and vote. My name's Kevin McKinley, and please vote for me.
Adam Wohl.
Thank you. I'm looking forward to go back to Juneau. I think we started some important work several years ago. We passed a bill that now we draw money from the earnings reserve to fund government. We needed to do that. Years and years ago, we had oil money gushing out of the ground. We stopped our income tax and we started giving everyone a check. We're the only state in the country that doesn't have a broad-based tax. We're the only state in the country that gives out checks to its individuals. And that might have worked great in 1980 or 1990, but we really have to look at that. And there wasn't a one question about the PFD tonight. I was kind of surprised. But I think these kinds of questions have to be dealt with head on. And we've started doing it over the last few years, and it's really important we continue. We have a governor that wants to cut his way out of this budget crisis, but we heard from years past that's not what the people want, at least from what I'm hearing. So we have to come up with a constructive solution that serves as many people as we can, and I truly believe in that. And for example, the university got a hatchet brought to it a couple of years ago, and I think we must turn that around.
Seat 6, Elijah Verhagen.
So thank you guys so much for hosting us again tonight, and thank you all the candidates that showed up. And this is not an easy task and not an easy thing that we're doing, but I felt prepared and I jumped in to run to represent District 6. I have a lot of legislative experience, again, working in Juneau for 4 different representatives, 7 sessions total. But at the same time, I only work sessions for a reason, because I do construction and have been running a construction company with my brother since I was a kid. And so I understand both sectors, and so I'm going to be going down to Juneau and doing my best to fight for fiscal stability. We have to make cuts, and we also have to bring in more revenue. It's not right that the private sector took a huge beating, and yet the operating budget this year did go up, and so we do need to work at that and come find common ground. And also 63%, there are 6,300 voters in District 6 are undeclared, and I'm running as an undeclared because I'm tired of the two-party drama. Thank you.
Vernon Carlson.
In closing, I want to recognize that the 2021 Alaska State Legislature is going to have 3 enormous challenges. The first is going to be rebuilding our economy from the rapid loss of the tourism. The second is going to be the rapid decline of oil revenue, and the third is going to be the low return on the permanent fund and resource development. I guarantee you I am the right person for this task. The term shovel-ready is widely used and must be used more. It worked for Franklin Roosevelt building roads and infrastructure, and it worked for Governor Parnell during the downturn of 2008, and it will work again because I will make it work. And also, as your elected representative for District 6, I'm going to ensure that we do a 90-day session. Less legislating means to less regulation. So I thank you all for attending tonight, and thank you, my host, for hosting this tonight.
Michael Kronk.
Thank you all for hosting this event. This is about people first and foremost. That's why we're here. I've been in District 6 for 40 years. I've been building connections, relationships, and understanding the ways of life and what is needed. A priority I've seen this year is putting food in the freezer. I know what that entails because I've been doing that for 40 years. I know the issues of rural Alaska in District 6. They go from strong education. We have abuse, we have addiction, lack of public safety. I know this because I've lived in District 6, and I've lived this every day for 40 years. I'm the candidate that understands the needs of the people of our district and has the best interests of all the people. I'm ready to get to Juneau. I'm ready to get to work. I'm ready to be there for the people. I'll be humbled and honored to have your vote on November 3rd. Thank you.
Julia? Nope.
Thank you so much. Thank you to KUAC, the public radio, which is a lifeline of communication and information for our villages and remote communities. And thank you to the League of Women Voters. While I was looking on your policies online today, I wanted to pull this from your policies, that the legislative process should be responsive, representative, accessible, efficient, and accountable. Those are all qualities that I will adhere to. A vote for me is a vote for someone who listens and acts responsibly. I will be a public servant. I care about our safety, our education, and our work opportunities. I will fight to have our resources developed by Alaskans, and we will have the opportunity to add value to our resources. A vote for me is a vote for fighting against urbanization by thoughtless policies that place burden on rural residents. I am not a political insider. I have not been picked by Anchorage establishment. The H might be silent in my name, but I'm not.
Thanks to our candidates for House 2, 5, and 6. While they're leaving their seats, we are sanitizing the dais and microphones, and the next group of candidates is taking their seats. We would like our listeners to know a little more about the League and the upcoming election. Here's Rich Seifert.
The League of Women Voters of the Tananaw Valley is the local chapter of the League of Women Voters of the United States. Founded in 1920, the League is a nonpartisan, nonprofit organization of women and men that encourages the informed and active participation of citizens in government at all levels. We work to increase understanding of our major public policy issues and are dedicated to voter education. The League does not endorse political candidates, but does advocate for major issues. The League is celebrating its 100th birthday and honoring 100 years of women's right to vote and the suffragists who labored for 70 years to win that right. To learn more about our organization, you can search for League of Women Voters on your favorite search engine. We urge registered voters to vote on Tuesday, November 3rd, or use early or absentee voting options. Early and special needs voting begins this Monday, October 19th, at 675 7th Avenue, Suite A2 in Fairbanks. The office will be open 7 days a week through Election Day. Monday through Friday hours are 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Saturday hours are 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. And Sunday hours are noon to 4 p.m. Election Day hours are 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. For the next round, Martha Reynolds and I will be posing questions to the candidates.
Right now, we are still sanitizing the area in between candidates, and our candidates are filing in. We'll be starting with the questions shortly.
And you're listening to Public Broadcasting for Alaska's Interior. This is KUAC 89.9 FM Fairbanks. And you are listening to the League of Women Voters of the Tananaw Valley Candidates Forum. The candidates are assembling, and the forum will continue momentarily.
And House seats 1, 3, and 4. The term for Senate seat B is 4 years. And the term for the House seats is 2 years. So while they're being seated, I will introduce them. For Senate seat B, we have 3 candidates: Evan Eads, Robert Myers, and Marna Sanford. For House seat 1, we have 2 candidates: Bart Lebon and Christopher Quist. And for House Seat 3, we have 1 candidate, Mike Prox. For House Seat 4, we have 2 candidates, Grier Hopkins and Keith Kerber. And I think we've just about got everyone here. So please use your 30 seconds to introduce yourself. We will begin with Senate seat B candidates and proceed around the room. Mr. Eads?
Hello, my name is Evan Eads, and I got into this race for one big reason. I object to the way business is happening down in Juneau. I'm a businessman, and I look at the problems we're facing in Juneau. We have no fiscal plan. Our budget is a mess. And our current plan, which our resources are meant to support us and to support our state, and it's not happening. We're giving away our resources. We have no business plan for our state, and I would like to change that.
Mr. Myers.
Good evening. My name is Robert Myers. I'm born and raised here in the interior. I'm a UAF graduate, and I drive a truck for a living. The problem in our state is that we've had these patterns for the last 40 years. And for a long time they worked because we had the money to make them work. And now we don't have that money anymore. And it's time for us to break these patterns, time for us to find a new way of doing business in this state. that will allow us to move forward and not be quite so dependent on our government.
Thank you. Ms. Sanford.
Thank you for having me. I'm Marna Sanford. I'm a lifelong independent Alaskan with the experience necessary to represent this entire district. And that's not an easy feat. Senate B is a really, really diverse district. And there's going to be a number of things that we don't agree on. But one of the things that's apparent after talking to voters from Esther to North Pole is that the majority of people in Senate B want a long-term sustainable fiscal plan. And that's what I plan to do if you send me to Juneau on November 3rd.
Mr. LeBon.
I'm Bart LeBon, current representative for House District 1. Our state business model is broken, and now is not the time for on-the-job training. We are facing an economic crisis not experienced in Alaska since the mid-1980s. We need an experienced leader in Juneau who has a strong business background and broad history of community involvement. I bring 42 years of commercial banking experience with me to Juneau. Plus, I served on the House Finance Committee. I also served 6 years on the school board, and that combined experience will make me an excellent candidate.
Mr. Quist.
Thank you. My name is Christopher Quist, candidate for House District 1 to represent the downtown Fairbanks area. I was born and raised in Fairbanks. I've started and run small businesses. I've served on the Fairbanks North Star Borough Assembly for the last six years, currently the presiding officer. I'm aiming to bring my diverse experience to Juneau to represent Fairbanks, to fight for quality education, defend our university system, advocate for environmentally friendly policies. Thank you.
And Mr. Prox.
Thank you for hosting this forum. I'm Mike Prox. I've lived in the North Pole Badger Road area for going on 50 years, and I was appointed to fill the vacancy in House District 3 when Representative Wilson resigned. And when I applied for that job, I told the folks that I felt an obligation to uphold the Constitution of the state of Alaska, and that's what I intend to do when I go back to Juneau next year.
Mr. Hopkins.
Thank you. And I'd like to thank the League of Women Voters for putting this on today and all your work for voter enfranchisement and for KUAC for hosting this event as well on air. My name is Grier Hopkins, and I'm born and raised in our district and a product of our local schools here. I'm running for my first reelection, and this district, which is very large, represents Esther, Goldstream, Farmers Loop, Birch Hill, Steel Creek, and Downtown Fox. I'm proud of my record over the last 2 years, working across the aisle, and if you send me back down to Juneau, I'm promised to put that record back to work for all of the district, all of Fairbanks, and for all of Alaska.
Mr. Kerber.
Hi, my name is Keith Kerber, and I'm running as a Republican candidate for House District 4, West Fairbanks. If you send me to Juneau, what you're getting is a veteran, a 30-year retired Army colonel of Green Berets, a minister who started a church here in town and knows how to work with people who are finding themselves challenged in life, and also a grandfather who is fortunate to have 4 adult kids and 14 grandkids. Thank you, League of Women Voters and KUAC.
Thank you, candidates. Question 1, you will have 30 seconds to respond. Given how divisive politics are in our country and state have become, what steps would you suggest to overcome this divisiveness and make state government more effective? What are some areas of legislation which you expect to reach across the aisle? Starting with seat 1, Mr. Quist.
Thank you. For the last 6 years, I've served on the Fairbanks North Star Borough Assembly, and it's been a regular exercise in collaboration and cooperation. We're a bipartisan group, but we are ideologically quite diverse. And in that time, I've worked with moderates and folks also on the extreme opposite side of the spectrum in the best interest of folks in the community. And I aim to bring that same experience and attitude to Juneau. Thank you.
Mr. LeBon?
Yes, I served on a bipartisan majority in the Alaska State House the last 2 years. So working well with others becomes an easy, natural thing for me to do. I will absolutely find a way to get the job done. I have made very good relationships, established a good relationship working-wise with both House members and Senate members, so I'm confident that that will not be a problem if I'm reelected.
Mr. Prox.
Thank you. I think the best way to get along is for us to focus every day on the difference between the function of governing and the function of providing. And if we focus on the function of governing, that is stuff we have to agree to. And that's generally restriction, that's governing. When we're talking about providing, we have to give people the liberty to walk away from whatever we're providing rather than forcing them to support it. Thank you.
Seat 4, Mr. Kerber.
I think that one way you can work towards bridging the gaps of divisiveness is to understand that the people you're talking to also come from families, maybe have families, have dreams, goals, and aspirations. As we move forward in what looks to be a contentious time, we need to maintain the human dignity of the people that we're working with while always looking towards the future desires, goals, and aspirations of our fellow Alaskans which we're serving. Thank you.
Mr. Hopkins.
Thank you. This was my first session heading down to Juneau, and I went down there knowing that I had a lot to learn. But I also went to Juneau ready to listen, and with the approach that it's amazing what you can accomplish when you don't worry about who gets the credit. I was proud of my record to pass legislation with people from the other party in both bodies, whether it's amendments to the legislature to help with wildfire funding and protection, or landmark energy legislation, or working with the local government here and the local mayor and assembly to make sure that our builders had the economic incentive they had to increase our economy.
To Senate seat B, Mr. Myers.
So there seems to be a tendency with people on both sides of the political spectrum to find, if there's a problem that we don't like the solution for, we tend to ignore the problem. And that's the exact wrong approach. Don't ignore the problem. Find a better solution. People can come to me with a problem that they have, and maybe we have different values and different ways of approaching things, but I don't want to ignore the problem. I want to find a better solution.
Ms. Sanford?
Well, I mentioned it in my intro, and I'll say it again. In talking with people in Senate District B, what has resonated most clearly to me is that it didn't matter whether they were a Republican or a Democrat or a nonpartisan voter. People want a long-term sustainable fiscal plan. That is loud and clear. And so in working together to create new revenues and the sustainable plan that we need for Alaskans, I think that if our constituents are screaming for it, there's no way to not find solutions.
Mr. Eads?
I think that if we return to constitutional principles, we'll find that there is a nonpartisan avenue to be found. If we follow the Constitution, if we believe that the laws of the constitutional obligations apply to all of us equally, that is our path forward. You know, I found in business that you don't often ask in business where people's political affiliations lie. You are looking to find a mutually beneficial path forward, and I think that's where our pathway lies as we look to our government that we want.
Okay, so next we have two lightning round questions. So question number two, do you believe in climate change? Beginning with seat number three, Mr. Prox.
If climate isn't changing, it would be the only thing in the world that isn't. So it must be.
Seat number four, Mr. Hopkins.
Yes.
Mr. Kerber.
Yes.
Senate seat B, Ms. Sanford.
I do.
Mr. Eads.
Yes.
Mr. Myers.
Yes.
Seat one, Mr. LeBon.
Yes, I believe the climate is constantly in flux.
Mr. Quist.
The best science overwhelmingly says yes.
So this next question is also a lightning round. Do you believe that at this time, human activity is a primary driver of climate change? Seat number four, Mr. Kerber.
No.
Mr. Hopkins.
Yes.
Senate seat B, Mr. Myers.
No.
Ms. Sanford?
Yes.
Mr. Eads?
It is a driver, yes.
And House Seat 1, Mr. Quist?
The best science overwhelmingly says yes.
Mr. Laban?
Not primary, but a contributing factor.
And Seat 3, Mr. Prox?
I don't know that it's a primary factor.
Question 4 is the governor disbanded the state climate change task force, and the borough's climate change task force has been put on hold. All this inactivity is despite record high temperatures, wildfires, low salmon returns, and loss of sea ice. There are two parts to this question. One, what specific effective steps do you think the state should take to address climate change? And two, how would you support the growing green renewable energy sector? You each have 1 minute. Ms. Sanford.
So we are just now finding out that bond rating companies are actually affecting government's bond ratings based on whether or not they have a climate action plan, which is amazing to think that we would potentially stand to lose money because we haven't taken the action to come up with a plan. So I absolutely, there is a plan. Under Governor Palin, one was developed that has been sitting on the shelf and gathering dust. We need a coordinated system for data collection, analysis, and monitoring that impacts all of our infrastructure so that we're not rebuilding roads after roads after roads when we are not using the best possible science. As far as renewables, I think Representative Hopkins put forward a bill last session that was a great first step that allows tax credits for homeowners that use renewable sources and have excellent energy ratings. And those are the kind of things that we should be doing at a larger level.
Mr. Eads?
On some of these things, it's not clear what the state can do on some of the issues in regard to the climate in particular is a much grander problem than just the state can tackle on its own, clearly. But what we should do in terms of looking at, we should roll back some of the restrictions that we've had. I know of some wind farms that have been put up that haven't been able to come onto the grid that have had significant regulatory problems. And we could do a whole number of things with renewable energy and the regulatory nightmares that they face in this state right now. In terms of addressing climate change single-handedly on the state level, I do not have a plan for that currently. And I'll leave it at that.
Mr. Myers?
So what we're going to run into here is the fact that Alaska is a small state with a small population that is outsized, that is affected in an outsized way due to our position in the world as an Arctic area and due to our relatively poor infrastructure. So we're going to have a hard time dealing with it. We don't have the resources here to prevent climate change. We're going to have to do our level-headed best to address it in a mitigation standpoint. We've already had to move one village, and that may be something that we have to repeat going forward. And we need to be preparing for that as we go forward. As far as renewable energy goes, there's an old saying that what you subsidize, you get more of. And so as we look at things like the Power Cost Equalization Program and other things that the state does, we have to ask, are we subsidizing green energy or are we subsidizing diesel fuel purchases?
Mr. Laban?
Yeah, statewide, we should have built Susitna 35 years ago. But since that opportunity was lost, we need to look at hydropower opportunities, be it Susitna. Wind and solar will help move that needle. But really what's of concern to me is local. We need to improve the Fairbanks and North Pole air quality, and we're making progress toward that end. Fairbanks natural gas, clean burning natural gas is coming into downtown Fairbanks and North Pole. And the use of LE investments through their Aurora Energy Solutions company is drying firewood to help clean the air, and those are great programs.
Mr. Quist?
Thank you. I'm glad to hear a conversation about air quality, but you know, burning trees is carbon neutral. So there's a good way to do it, and there's a bad way to do it. And so we do need to move the dial on air quality. I feel very strongly about that. But regarding climate change, we need to reinstate our climate action plan and task forces locally and at the state level. Alaska has the ability to lead on this in a lot of ways. Here in the University of Alaska Fairbanks, we have a world-class Arctic research institution, and we need to be supporting that so that we can lead on this globally and understand the impacts of climate change and better understand how to mitigate and reverse climate change. On the state level, we, as has been said, we are going to have to do a lot of mitigation for a lot of the communities that have been hit hardest here. Thank you.
Mr. Prox.
Yeah, thank you. You know, whether humans are a primary cause or any cause of climate change, we ought to be sensitive to our to what we do and how we impact our environment, obviously. I think as far as some of the proposals that are going on in the name of preventing climate change, we need to look at the total impact from mining the materials to build the equipment to disposing of that equipment when it's over to know the full environmental impact. And the other in locally, Representative Bond mentioned that East Valley Coal stepped forward is building a wood kiln in District 3 using, now we weren't using the right word, we're using biomass. And that's a carbon neutral, and that is an economical resource that provides a lot of local employment. And on the other hand, there's some citizens that are putting so many restrictions on that they're preventing people from using it. And I don't think that that's the right approach.
Mr. Hopkins?
Thank you. The first thing we can do is to bring those climate change impact plans that you were talking about in the question back out of the trash can that the governor put them in and put them on the table. Because as Marna Sanford said, these climate change impact plans are important to keep the cost of construction and bonding down, both for our state and municipal governments. These also help our Department of Transportation and the military plan ahead for things like how we repave Goldstream Road for the 100th time, or how we provide new military installations like a deep water port on out in Nome. But to bring more small-scale renewables online is critical to pass what was called Senate Bill 123 that I worked with Senator Coghill on, an effort 30 years in the making to finally have utilities plan together, lower costs, and bring more renewables online by something called an open access tariff that allows utilities, no matter where they are in the state, to purchase renewable energy from other parts without having those tariffs jack up the cost of power over other utilities' power lines, meaning Homer can now buy power from Delta.
Mr. Kerber.
We've heard the term best science tonight. That's interesting because over time that science changes. I know as a teenager I was being told that we were heading for the next ice age. In my 30s I was told we were going to all die of heat. So in terms of checking out whether or not the men or women are the biggest driver of the climate change, we just got to come to grips with the fact that the climate is changing. And so one of the tools that I think we should take a look at is exactly what Representative LeBon mentioned, and that was hydropower. That's one that's often overlooked in lieu of wind or solar. And that's something that we have, thankfully, an abundant supply of in the state of Alaska is water.
Thank you. Next, we will have three lightning round questions leading up to a longer answer question. So question number 5 in lightning round is about ballot measure number 1, which would increase the taxes on North Slope oil production. How do you suggest voters cast their ballot on measure 1, for or against? Beginning with House Seat 1, Mr. Quist?
For.
Mr. LeBon?
Against.
House Seat 3, Mr. Prox?
Well, if I was a producer, I wouldn't take the deal, so I would suggest that we vote no.
House Seat 4, Mr. Kerber?
No.
Mr. Hopkins?
At this point, I'm still undecided, listening to more of the producers and Alaskans.
Senate Seat B, Mr. Eads?
Unequivocally, yes.
Mr. Myers?
No.
Ms. Sanford?
I plan to vote yes.
Okay, question number 6, another lightning round question. Would you support passage of a resolution to place a constitutional amendment before the voters to change the vote needed to override a governor's veto on all bills to a 2/3 vote of the legislature rather than a 3/4? House seat 3, Mr. Prox.
No, the veto is designed to prevent the legislature from doing
House
something.
House seat number 4, Mr. Hopkins.
Yes.
Mr. Kerber.
No.
Senate seat B, Mr. Myers.
No.
Ms. Sanford.
Yes.
Mr. Eads.
Yes.
House seat 1, Mr. LeBon.
Yes.
Mr. Quist.
Yes.
And now a third lightning round for question number 7. Do you think that there is a legal means for forward funding of public education? Seat number 4, Mr. Kerber.
I am undecided on this at this time.
Mr. Hopkins.
Undoubtedly, yes.
Senate B, Ms. Sanford.
Yes.
Mr. Eads.
Yes.
Mr. Myers.
No.
House seat 1, Mr. Quist.
Yes, I do.
Mr. LeBon.
Yes.
And House seat 3, Mr. Prox.
No, that binds a future legislature, and that's against the Constitution.
Okay, question 8. You'll have 1 minute and 45 seconds to answer this big one. Commonwealth North has a budget calculator at www.akbudget.com that allows the public to look at various ways to try to balance the state budget. The calculator makes it clear that we will need both increased revenue and decreased expenses. How would you balance the state budget? Name at least 2 specific sources of increased revenue and 2 specific cuts in spending you would make. First, the Senate B, Mr. Eads.
Okay, well, I think that the first thing that we have to look at is our constitutional duty to develop our resources for the maximum benefit of the people in Article 8. And I don't think that's being done. So I think you could, if you want to count all the resources up and all the ways that we could benefit from those things, that would be a good start. That means not just oil. That means our mining. That means our fisheries. That means a lot of things that we are not getting a maximum benefit for. In particular with mining, we have 0 severance tax on our gold. And on our oil, we have a 4% net rate. I believe even if ballot measure 1, well, whether it passes or not, there is going to need to be a lot of work done on that to boost our revenue. In terms of specific cuts, I think the first cuts, similarly, should be 2 subsidies to big foreign corporations and multinational corporations who are extracting resources on our land. I have a big problem when we are paying out massive state subsidies and we're cutting the people and we're cutting services and all these talks of cuts. In terms of cuts, that's where the first one should be, is 2 massive state subsidies that are happening to these big corporations. I would say further that there are other cuts that can be made, and any cuts that should be made should actually affect the legislature as well. So let's look at cuts to per diem, for example, if we're looking at other cuts to the state budget. And anyway, I think that is what we have to look at. We have to look at our entire basis of our state was based on a resource wealth that and the management of that. And if we can't get that right, we will get nothing right.
Mr. Myers.
So the top 5 drivers of our operating budget in order are education, health and social services, primarily Medicaid, corrections, the University of Alaska, and our transportation budget. You don't address those top 5, you don't get anywhere. Put those 5 together, you get about 86-87% of the budget in this state. And we're going to have to address all of them and figure out exactly what is driving each of those. And we need to say, we have been doing things in this state for a certain way for 40 years. It's time to change how we do things. We need to look at how other states across the country are operating these same types of programs, how they are getting their results, And yes, we're a different state. We deal with a lot of different challenges up here, so I don't expect us to do everything the same. But we have to say, how can we operate things at a much more efficient cost? We spend over $14,000 per person in this state. That's number one by far. And we can't afford to do that anymore. It's, conditions have changed, and we have to address that. As far as revenue goes right now, I don't really see any revenues that we can have right now because our state is already in a recession. You might even use the word depression. And any sort of revenue that we take in right now is simply going to push our economy further down the hole. And the Commonwealth North study, it simply doesn't address the problem that we need to change how we do business in this state.
Ms. Sandberg.
Yeah, part of the reason why the cost per person in Alaska is so high is because that sum that Mr. Myers just said includes the permanent fund that we are sending out to every Alaskan. So to say that we have the highest rate in the United States is, I don't know, to use that as a method to determine whether or not we're on track is not fair, in my opinion. And you also left out one of the largest cost drivers in the state, which is also paying out the permanent fund and debt service to make sure that everybody who's worked really hard in this state for our state gets to have a retirement as well. So don't forget those two as cost drivers. So when we're looking for a long-term sustainable fiscal plan and we're looking at new revenues, I agree with Mr. Eads. Whether that ballot measure passes or not, we have to have oil and gas and extractive industry at the table. And I've told that to them, that if you put me in Juneau, this is not something that I'm going to ignore any longer. There is just no way that we turn our back on our natural resources and the amount of money that they could be bringing in. But to say also that we should not be looking at broad-based tax is also, is in my opinion, not the correct way to go about it. We've had a number of different broad-based taxes that have been proposed since the Walker administration. That, and some of them who have made it either through the House or through the Senate that haven't been able to be passed through. These are things, taxes, motor fuels tax that has not been touched in decades. Click Bishop proposed an education tax. We used to have one. Why that made it through the Senate? Why can't that make it through the House? Some of these things aren't going to make a lot of money, but we need all things to be on the table. I have cuts planned too, but I know I don't have time.
Mr. LeBon.
Yes. We'll start with cuts. I chaired three subcommittees of House Finance, Department of Public Safety, Department of Revenue, and Department of Military and Veterans Affairs. I would challenge each commissioner of every agency to give me a 1% reduction in their budgets. Total agency spending is $4 billion. 1% is $40 million. That would be the challenge. Second part, and this comes from my chairing the subcommittee on Department of Public Safety, is I would ask other organized parts of the state, for example, Mat-Su Borough, Kenai Borough, Fairbanks North Star Borough, to also help pay for their trooper service. I represent House District 1, located in downtown Fairbanks, entirely within the city of Fairbanks, and guess what? My constituents pay for their police and fire protection. So why not ask for large population centers up and down the rail belt, Kenai, Mat-Su, and Fairbanks to help with their public safety with a assessment on state troopers. On revenue, I'm going to echo what I just heard. I supported the fuel tax concept. I meet often with Senator Bishop. One of the factors that we need to keep in mind with that fuel tax is, number one, we're the lowest in the country, and number two, the Alaska Truckers Association is okay with that. So that means a lot to me. And thinking back when I first came up to Alaska, we had a school tax. It wasn't very large. I think it was $10 for those of you who know the history of that. I would look at reinstating the school tax, head tax, for a revenue source.
Mr. Quist.
Thank you. My opponent would start with cuts, and you know, he voted to cut the University of Alaska budget by $10.5 million this year. And I reject this scarcity mindset that's being pushed on us, that we need to balance our budget by cutting our way to the bottom, balancing our budget on the backs of hardworking families, while at the same time we're giving away millions and millions of dollars to some of the largest, most profitable, most historically most profitable multinational corporations in the world. It makes absolutely no sense to me. We have potential for new sources of revenue, or historically returning to historically balanced sources of revenue from our oil and gas resources. We can look at mining taxes again, which have not been examined since statehood was created. And we also need to look for long-term savings. Corrections budget's growing. How do you reduce the corrections budget? By investing in the youth of today. So by investing in programs like Universal Pre-K, we can radically cut the corrections budget. We just have to think past the next election cycle. Thank you.
Mr. Prox.
Yeah, thank you. I think the first step in getting a sustainable, and the key word sustainable, which is difficult to do, but the first step is to readjust the constitutional spending limit that is on the books, but it's just set too high. And that enables the legislature to spend wildly when revenues go up, when we get a windfall, and then we set a level of government that is unsustainable at more reasonable oil prices and economic activity. So that's the very first step. I think there's a couple of revenue measures that I would look at. The oil and gas property tax is not fairly implemented. It results in a significant windfall to the municipalities at the on the North Slope and in Valdez and the rest of the state, I think, is getting on the order of hundreds of millions of dollars shorted. And I don't think that meets the Constitution. I don't think it is fair. So we need to look at that. We need to look at all of the costs, of course, all the time in all of the agencies, the ones where we're only going to find significant enough room for improvement are going to be in education and Medicaid and health and social services. And fortunately, those are the types of services that individuals can provide voluntarily to one another. And we see in education there's a large homeschool movement, for instance, that is providing education services at no taxpayer expense. So I think we need to look at those things, and we also need to look very carefully at Medicare, because that seems to have a lot of room for improvement.
Mr. Hopkins.
Thank you. The important part about this question is, how does it impact our long-term fiscal plan? We need to get Alaska off of the fossil fuel roller coaster, where our budget increases dramatically when the price of oil goes up, and then has to be slashed again with good programs and good projects getting shelved when the price of oil falls below us. On that note, Mr. Myers was incorrect about our biggest budget driver in the state. Our biggest budget driver is the permanent fund dividend at $2 billion for a statutory dividend. And the first place I would look at cutting is compromising and working with the entire legislature to find a new formula for that dividend, one that has been in place for my entire life here in Alaska. Additionally, I agree with many people up here that the corrections budget, one of the few agency budgets that we saw dramatically increasing, is a place we need to look at where we can save money. I was proud to have voted against the final rollback of criminal justice reform, because that bill this past year locked nonviolent criminals up for longer, nonviolent drug offenders and drug abusers up for longer. That's an incredible cost every day that's requiring us to open new prisons instead of finding ways to get these people off of their addictions and back to work. And that's what I believe would save us money in the long term. For revenue, I agree with also a number of people up here, which hopefully bodes well for work in Juneau, that we need to find ways to change the motor fuel tax like Senator Bishop moved forward. That had not been changed since JFK was president, longer than I've been alive. And we have more cars and more road miles than we saw then. And again, I agree with Mr. Prox. So hopefully we find some compromise. And we need a spending cap, because that's going to allow us to not see the budget increase dramatically and then have to be slashed when oil prices go forward. So I'm looking forward to compromising with whoever wins today from this panel up here.
And Mr. Kerber.
Well, the comedy here that was spoken about in the first question about getting along is breaking out all over the room, so that's pretty awesome. Hey, so you talked about cuts. In my time at the Doors with People, there's a great concern about our economy and its fragility right now, considering what we've gone through with the pandemic. where we have lost tourism essentially this for this entire year, and we've had these incredibly low oil prices. So my goal would be to look to increase revenue through perhaps what are considered unconventional means. Number one is, hey, paying down some of our debt. If you have a $200 a month car payment and you pay it off, you have just got $200 more back in your budget. That's just at the very practical family level, but it can be done at the state level too. UAF has a significant amount of debt on its books as a result of the new power plant, which they critically needed. And there may be a way to work on that. Mr. Prox also mentioned this notion of the oil property taxes, which affect the North Slope Borough, the Fairbanks North Star Borough, and the municipality of Valdez. So working on those things as equitable sharing might be a way to gain revenue without increasing taxes on people. So thank you.
Okay, question number 9, and you'll have 30 seconds for this. The delivery of education and medicine, as well as the running of many businesses, rely more than ever on access to broadband internet. What would you do to make broadband internet available to every household that wants it? We'll start with seat number 1, Mr. Quist.
Thank you. This is clearly more critical than it's ever been as more people are working remotely. And one of the best things that we can do is leverage federal dollars to install more broadband, create more jobs, and I think that that's going to be the biggest single part of solving this problem. Thank you.
Mr. LeBon.
I voted out of House Finance a bill to expand broadband service in rural Alaska. That's a start, and in many communities, it was very deficient, the broadband service, so I was happy to support that bill.
And seat number 3, Mr. Prox.
Well, I'm certainly interested in seeing how that service can be expanded. I think it is the wrong way to look at it, though, to think that simply because somebody wants something, they have a right to it. We've got to figure out how we're going to be willing to pay for it, and that therein the problem lies. But it is definitely something that we need to look at.
Seat number 4, Mr. Hopkins.
Thank you. I guess this is one place where I again disagree with Mr. Prox. Today broadband is almost a necessity in life, like electricity for safety and telephones, which brings me to the telecom industry, which has received hundreds of millions of dollars over the past 10 years from the federal government. We need to expand broadband, yet we have not seen those expansions at our homes. We need to make sure that we find ways to regulate broadband so that it is a utility. We need to incentivize GVEA to create a cooperative that they have the authority to do now to bring us broadband. We need to incentivize small businesses here in Fairbanks to be able to deliver those that broadband like we are not able to rely on for the large companies.
Mr. Kerber.
And this is a great question because I had the opportunity to knock doors with a couple of people. One, the local vendor for something called HughesNet, which is a satellite-delivered internet capability. His comment to me was we need to do our best to get regulatory blockades out of the way to promote the whole concept of satellite internet. And the next one was a gentleman who had rigged up his own pole to receive broadband from the city. So I think we have some solutions out there that regular Alaskans have developed. We need to get them in front of us to hear those.
Senate seat B, Mr. Myers.
Okay. Probably the fastest way that we can get broadband service out to people in more rural areas is going to be through the cell network. Personally, that's how I get my broadband at home. And going through that, I think that the ways that the state can help with that is they can help clear the way for permits for the companies building cell towers. We can help make more land available from the state, help negotiate with the feds if they've got some land that we can put a tower on, or we can look through creating a program with loans through ADA or something to help pay for it.
Ms. Sanford.
So I love talking about broadband. I work on it in my regular day-to-day job at Tananaw Chiefs Conference, where we are constantly trying to figure out ways to get broadband into the interior of Alaska. One of the critical issues that's not just for interior Alaska, rural interior Alaska, but for Fairbanks, is middle mile connectivity. And what that means is that we have all of these large telecom companies that are getting lots of money, as Representative Hopkins mentioned, and they're not getting it into your homes. Darn it.
And Mr. Eads.
I think technological innovation is going to be our step forward on this. There's a saying that we didn't leave the Stone Age because we ran out of stones, and that applies to many of these new technologies that are coming online. And I think that there is some hope for satellite connectivity. I don't believe that there is a plausible way that we're going to run fiber out far enough and fast enough to all the people that need it. It's going to have to come through technological innovation, and it's going to have to come through public-private partnerships.
Okay, thank you. I'm afraid we're going to have to skip a question because we've got we're running out of time. So we're going to go on to question 11, and you'll have 30 seconds for this question. According to mappingpoliceviolence.org, Alaska has the third highest rate of killing by police in the country, and people of color are disproportionately affected. How would you address this public safety issue? House seat 4, Mr. Hopkins.
Thank you. And this is a very important question, as we've seen all summer long. The numbers tell the truth about how minorities and black, brown, indigenous Alaskans have been impacted disproportionately. I believe we need to work with the state troopers and the police training institutions to give them the tools they need to succeed and the training they do, whether it's driving, as I learned from a ride-along that I did with the Alaska State Troopers just a few weeks ago, to crisis management and crisis de-escalation policies and implicit bias policies to make sure that our police have the tools they need to succeed in the world today.
Mr. Kerber.
Having been a police officer here in this town at the airport for about 6 years, I can say this is going to take a couple of prongs to solve. Number one is the same techniques that I was taught in the State Trooper Academy in the late 90s may not be the same ones that are being taught today. So they have to constantly be upgrading their what they call control tactics procedures. The other thing is we're going to have to get a little bit better dialogue between the community and the police departments themselves, because as important as it is that we have people safe when police show up, we also need the police safe as well.
Senate seat B, Mr. Eads.
I think dialogue and I think training are both important, but I also think that we can't continue to ask our law enforcement to be the front lines of mental health in our state. And I think when you have people who aren't trained in mental health that are dealing hands-on with significant mental health issues as the primary drivers of care in that industry, and you can see that in other areas as well, you're going to have significant problems. And so we have to prioritize mental health, and especially as it relates to how we tackle law enforcement.
Mr. Myers.
I'd tend to echo some of the things that Mr. Kerber said there, that we need to look at our training, make sure it's updated so we can give our law enforcement the best tools possible. And I believe we also need to be looking at our law enforcement personnel. They have some of the toughest jobs in the state, and they have some of the most responsibilities of the state. People that have responsibilities also need to be held accountable for those responsibilities. In order to restore the public trust in our law enforcement, we also need to make sure that we flush out those few bad apples that we may have.
Ms. Sanford.
So, prevention. We need better mental health and addiction services in Alaska. This is an area where we are woefully lacking, and with the right type of resources here, I believe it could come at a cost savings in our law enforcement programs. That said, I do think that well-supported, well-trained, and respected law enforcement officers tend to stay on the job and retain them longer. And as long as we support them and have a robust communication system, those things will help.
Now we're on to seat one, House seat one. Mr. Quist.
Thank you. The long-term solution is, like Ms. Sanford said, prevention, and we need to address the mental health and substance abuse crisis that we have here in District 1 and in communities across the state. And on the short or immediate term, we need to make sure that public safety officers are adequately supported and funded with the training that they need, and that we're engaging with the communities that they support and talking to those communities as well. Thank you.
Mr. LeBon.
I respect current and past law enforcement officers, and I also appreciate the comments by Mr. Kerber. As a former law enforcement officer, that's where you begin the dialogue with somebody who has the experience and has actually performed the duties. Thank you.
And House Seat 3, Mr. Prox.
Yes, thank you. I think it's important to realize that there probably aren't that many troopers out there that want to shoot anybody. They don't get invited to the house because they're delivering pizzas either. So I think a lot has been said about we need to deal with mental health problems and cultural problems. It's a very difficult problem to solve that we definitely do need to work on.
Okay, question 12. You have 30 seconds for this. What Alaskan Native issues will you take up? For example, subsistence hunting concerns and the disturbing problem of missing and murdered Alaskan Native women. What are your priorities? First, Mr. Myers.
I'd say the first thing that we need to address right away among our Native population, particularly out in our villages, is going to be law enforcement. Mentioned the missing indigenous women. That's definitely a huge part of it. We also have to deal with the huge rates of sexual assault, and I think the first thing that we need to do for that is to upgrade and expand our VPSO program, revamp that where necessary. It looks like some of the training needs to be changed, and we need to start with it. Start right there.
Ms. Sanford?
Tribal recognition. There was a bill that passed last legislative session through the House, and I'm hopeful that if I go to Juneau that I can be a co-sponsor of that legislation again. Tribal recognition just allows tribes to be at the table when we pass any type of legislation or regulatory regimes that are going to impact people in our tribal communities, and I think that's a great first start, recognizing that they were here first and that this is their table.
Mr. Eads.
I think clean running water is a big issue in a lot of these areas, and I know that there have been some steps made and there's some ideas talked about to address that. I know some private companies that have come up with some solutions, but I think that when you look at the water issues that a lot of these rural areas are facing, it's egregious, and especially in the modern world that we live in, access to clean running water must be an imperative.
Mr. LeBon.
I did two things as chair of the subcommittee for Alaska Department of Public Safety. The first thing I did was I increased the VPSO budget by $1 million, sent it up to Finance Committee with addition to that funding. Second thing I did was I increased by several hundred thousand dollars the sexual assault response team funding. This enables investigation activities to carry on statewide and add more funding to help respond to that type of a criminal activity.
Mr. Quist?
Thank you. We need to do so many things. We need to bolster the VPSO program. We need to defend the Power Cost Equalization Fund. We need to recognize tribes and interact with them on a government-to-government basis. And above all, I think that we need to listen, and that's something that I plan on doing. Thank you.
Mr. Prox.
Well, I think I agree, especially with Mr. Quist's last statement. I think we do need to listen. The rural communities have their representatives, and we need to be mindful of their concerns. And what I've spent a little bit of time in villages over the years, and they would like self-reliance just as much as the folks in District 3.
Mr. Kerber.
So one of the first jobs I did in the National Guard when I came back to Alaska in 1993 was I was a company commander with a headquarters in Nalato, Alaska, with units up and down the Yukon and also on the Arctic coast. And the VPSO program and upgrading that is a important initiative, I believe. And there are some plans out there that could allow for them not just to be public safety officers, but be fully qualified police at a federal and state level. I think that could enhance the security out there in rural Alaska. Thank you.
Mr. Hopkins.
Thank you. I'm glad that many topics have been brought up here just now. Many of that also should include education and health care in rural Alaska. But as Mr. Quist and Mr. Prox said, we shouldn't go down to Juneau as legislators and tell other Alaskans what their problems are or what they need. We need to listen to our rural colleagues and our rural neighbors here from Fairbanks and across the state and listen to them about where their priorities are and what they need from us to work with them to solve issues that are going to put all Alaskans on an equal and equitable footing.
Okay, we'll move on to question number 13, which is another lightning round. Ballot measure 2 would give Alaskans open primaries and ranked choice voting for general elections, as well as requiring more campaign finance disclosure. How do you suggest voters vote on ballot measure number 2, for or against? House seat 1, Mr. Quist.
For.
Mr. LeBon.
No.
House seat 3, Mr. Prox.
No.
House seat 4, Mr. Hopkins.
My mind is not made up, but I would recommend yes to other people.
Mr. Kerber.
No.
Senate seat B, Ms. Sanford.
I'm voting yes.
Mr. Eads.
I'm undecided.
And Mr. Myers.
No.
Okay, that brings us to the end of our questions. Thank you, everyone, for your time, and we will now have closing statements. You each will have 1 minute. We'll begin with House Seat 3, Mr. Prox.
Thank you for hosting this forum, and thank you to all of those that are in the audience listening to this for taking an interest in public affairs, and be sure and get out and exercise your right to vote. Thank you.
House Seat 4, Mr. Kerber.
Hey, again, I echo his comments in thanking both the League of Women Voters and KOAC for not only putting this on, but also archiving it so people who weren't able to hear it tonight could. I also want to thank candidates because I'll never look at a candidate again as a first-time candidate myself in the same way. I asked somebody, with all the challenges we have in Juneau, what the best way to get a different result is, and they said very quickly, elect different people. I'm putting myself forward as one of those different people. I think the number one issue facing us is working towards a sustainable budget for the state of Alaska that's not battered by, again, the comments of rising oil prices or falling oil prices. I believe, as far as the PFD goes, as a former law enforcement officer in Alaska, lawmakers should follow the law until they change. And finally, with a couple of graduates from the UA system in my household, I believe that UAF, the flagship campus of the state of Alaska system, should be maintained as the premier Arctic Higher Learning Institute. Thank you.
Mr. Hopkins.
Thank you, and thank you again to everybody at home, and thank you to Mr. Kerber here for putting his name forward, and it's good to finally meet you in this weird election cycle we have. Usually I meet another candidate months ago, but, you know, the things that I've done down here is pass responsible budgets that two of them and across the aisle and working with people in disparate backgrounds around Juneau and across Alaska. And we did that by listening to the people back home. During the budget crisis of 2019, the House Finance Committee came to Fairbanks and held public testimony that lasted for 9 hours. We had then a public hearing at the Pioneer Park where almost a thousand Fairbanksans showed up to voice their opinions on the budget. We listened to what they had to say. And we've followed that request, and we've followed those actions, and we've put forward responsible budgets that have defended against raids on the permanent fund, worked to get us off of the fossil fuel roller coaster, but we still have a lot of work left to do, and I'd appreciate your vote on November 3rd because we still have a lot of work left to do together. Thank you.
Senate seat B, Mr. Eads.
The path forward in our state requires sacrifice. There's no doubt about that. The path forward requires of following our constitutional mandates. I have determined that the sacrifice that I can make personally, and it's late in the game, but I'm going to be dropping out of this race. And I'm going to be, I hadn't decided this until this evening, but I will be endorsing Marna Sanford. The reason for that is I believe we can work together. I believe that she will incorporate my ideas for the future of our state in looking for our resource development, targeting that, because without that, we have no future. And I look forward to working with her going forward.
Mr. Myers.
Well, it's been mentioned a few times tonight that our most critical critical issue ahead of us for this coming year is going to be finding a path forward to a sustainable budget. And the question is, how do we get there and what kind of a model do we use to get there? And it's interesting to hear the different takes from different candidates. Effectively, they fall into two basic categories. One is, let's keep doing the same thing that we've been doing and simply find a new way to pay for it. And the other is to find new solutions and a different way to address the problems that we have in the state and provide the services that our government is required to provide and that our citizens expect. I intend to go to Juneau and find a new path forward. We have these patterns that we've been following for 40 years, and it's time to break the pattern. Thank you.
Ms. Sanford.
Thank you to the League for hosting and to KUAC for broadcasting. I just want to quickly say that what Mr. Myers said just now really touches me to the core, because it hasn't been business as usual in Juneau since the oil prices have dropped, and they have made significant cuts. And there certainly is an argument that our budget was bloated, but Alaskans spoke out loud and clear that it is not bloated any longer. So when we're talking about business as usual, what we're talking about is not looking at new and different revenue sources. I will not stand by while we make continued cuts to our education services, our university, and our healthcare services, which are vital to healthy Alaskans. Hey, listen, we're not going to agree on everything. There's no way. But I'm listening. And we don't have to agree on everything. But you need to have the ability to believe in me that we can disagree and still come to good solutions for all Alaska.
House seat number one, Mr. LeBon.
Yes, thank you for hosting this forum this evening. Serving in the Alaska State House is an honor, and I'm privileged to represent downtown Fairbanks House District 1. The job isn't always easy. We have to go down to Juneau, and we have no choice but to pass out a balanced budget. And doing so in this current environment will be the biggest challenge I believe the state has faced since before oil started flowing through the pipeline. Our business model is broken. We cannot rely on the throughput of the pipeline and the price of oil to save us in the near term. So coming down to Juneau, this upcoming session is going to require working together like the legislature has never done before. And I think with my experience I've gathered in the last 2 years, I can do that, and I've proven the ability to work together with other legislators. Thank you for hosting this. Thank you.
Mr. Quist.
Thank you, and thank you to everyone who's paying attention to this race and other races at what feels like the most critical election, at least in my lifetime. I'm running for state house because I feel our state is on the right track, and I want to help get us heading in the right direction again. My folks moved here to Fairbanks and went to the university in the 60s, and they fell in love with Fairbanks, and they decided to stay and make a life for themselves here. And I'd like to fight for those same opportunities for folks today and the generations to come. I think that I have a diverse experience in the public and private sector, as well as working in government, chair of the finance committee at the borough, and most recently the presiding officer. I'm looking forward to the rest of this race, and I would appreciate your vote on or before November 3rd. Thank you.
Thank you to all the candidates, and thanks also to the audience here and to those listening to the KUAC broadcast, and to the Fairbanks North Star Borough Clerk's Office for making the assembly chambers available and set up. We appreciate Get Out the Native Vote's steadfast encouragement to all voters. Keep your eyes open for other opportunities to learn about the candidates and ballot measures with broadcast events and the Fairbanks Daily Newsminer. Exercise your right to vote, and together we will make democracy work. Good night from the League of Women Voters of the Tanana Valley.